What's up, y'all? My name is Desmond. I'm here on the line as a UAW 4811 member on day one of UCLA's historic stand-up strike. We've been out here since 8 in the morning, the same exact location that the university and these far-right mobs attacked the peaceful Gaza Solidarity encampment, which was filled with workers, students, and community members who were out here protesting for a free Palestine, saying that the university must divest from apartheid, genocide, and occupation. And so, like I said, I'm here as a UAW 4811 member telling the university that we're not going to stand for their repression. We're not going to stand for them saying that we can't stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people and with the Palestinian movement. We're here to say free Palestine. We're here to shut down the operations of the university for as long as we need be.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of West Bank Robbery. We got a full stack for you today. We got Amr, we've got AP, and we've got me, Bassem, one of your hosts. Say hello, Amr.
Hey, how's it going, folks?
Everybody tell Amr how you're doing. Great. Wow, we love to hear it, guys. I'm sorry that happened. Whatever. we got a pretty stacked show for you today, not because of any sort of pre-planning we've done, but because the world has been pretty stacked up lately. There's a little country called Palestine, okay? And it's been making the news a lot lately. Doing a lot better. Everybody counted it out, but goddamn if it's not on the news. So you were sending me these things, All Eyes on Rafah.
Well, it's an AI-generated I don't know what you call it, a meme or a picture or a poster of some kind. It's like says All Eyes on Rafah spelled in tents. There's mountains there for some reason. As far as I'm aware, Gaza doesn't have any mountains, at least not like snow-capped mountains. And this is like an Instagram template that like has become really popular over the last however many hours. Full admission, I shared it initially. So I had reservations. Mm-hmm. I was a bit like, ugh about it. And then I shared it because I was like, okay, I guess if everyone else is doing it, I might as well do it. And then I deleted it because I realized that that's a stupid thing to think. Like, that's a stupid process to think of. And the critiques I saw of it are actually, like, to me, make a lot of sense. In that, A, it's an AI-generated image. It looks like shit, first of all. And there's no shortage of real photos sent to us from brave journalists in Gaza right now, like actually taking photos of the damage and destruction. B, it admits political impotence. It's sort of tacit admission that like all eyes on Rafah. Okay, well, all eyes have been on Gaza for the past 8 months. Eyes on things don't really affect political change. Like, this is the whole, like, witness, you have to witness this thing. It's like, no, genocides aren't to be witnessed. They're there to be stopped. Like, you're supposed to, like, stop them, not just fucking witness them. And thirdly, and this is where my personal biggest critique is, I think the reason this thing got popular, and I think it's shocked me how popular it is, as in, like, everyone from, like, Chelsea football players that I follow to, like, Fran Kirby, Chelsea women's footballer, shared this, as well as like my annoying coworker whose feed is just populated with like him in bars and clubs and getting drunk with his group of friends, shared this as well. Really? First thing he's ever shared about Palestine, by the way, but neither here nor there. Which is, you know, on the one hand, you can like see it as like a victory in that like enough people have like switched on, if you will. But my concern about it is All Eyes on Rafah is such an inoffensive phrase. It's so devoid of any political will. I don't think it's deliberate, at least, but I do think it limits the political horizon insofar as the reason it's so popular and everyone's sharing it is that it's All Eyes on Rafah. It's not something like from the river to the sea or free Palestine.
So it's an American drama.
Viva Palestina. You don't have to recognize Palestinian sovereignty about, like, if you share it, you still don't have to recognize Palestinian sovereignty as such. You just have to be like, what's happening in Iraq?
Facebook and a bunch of stories have the same photo, actually. But no, yeah, that makes sense. Like, because it is a U.S.-drawn, like, red line, supposedly, even if it's not. You know, that is something that the U.S. decided was just completely, like, off limits. It's like, Gaza City, fuck it. Whatever. That's where war happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Khan Yunis. It's whatever. But like even like, I mean, first of all, like we can all agree that like there's no actual red line. It's all fucking rhetoric. Like they're already in Rafah and the US is like, well, no, it's not actually defensive or whatever. But like, yeah, like this just subsumes any political project into like, look, this is happening and it's bad. And like, obviously, yeah, it's happening and it's bad. But you could see the reason people like my coworker or Chelsea footballers are sharing this is because it explicitly doesn't doesn't name the perpetrator, doesn't say who's doing this, it's just all eyes on Rafah. Okay, great. And B, it doesn't name like the Palestinian cause. It doesn't really say, you know, this is why Palestinians deserve sovereignty, for example, or a national liberation, if you will. I don't know, it just pissed me off a lot. And like, obviously, I'm pissed off because I'm pissed off at myself too for having fallen into that trap, if you will, and sharing it and everything. And obviously, again, also social media doesn't really matter, but like,
I think it matters. You know, I go back and forth, like,
are you on that matter side of it now?
I think so. At the very least, because Palestinians are winning social media, like, Palestinians adopted like internet communication, like, I don't know, memetic warfare or what have you, like earlier than the Israelis, and got a lot better at it and are having a lot more traction.
Yeah, but what does winning mean in that context? Like, yeah, sure, like they're winning in the sense that they have bigger audiences and more access to like audiences in the West. But like, how does that translate to affecting political change and like, you know, really change?
It definitely, I think, alters people's ideology in some way, you know, like it's nothing without structure to funnel it. But I feel like, you know, there's a lot of people out there in bumfuck middle America who would be like, you know what, if Mr. Qasem came up to me and said, are you willing to fight for Palestine? I'd do it, you know, but there's no structure to capture them.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's fair.
I don't know. Like, it definitely can't be the end of it, but like, it does feel valuable. I don't know why. If anything, just for the fundraising aspect, so that's full, but America's not really governed by people. Or the West or anything. So
I don't know. That's kind of the part that weirds me out is the fundraising. It really feels like watching TikTok now. Every other ad is a fundraising ad for aid for Gaza. And I don't know. It just gives me like seriously like Haiti earthquake vibes. Like it feels like now the wolves are out and they see, okay, now we can make money on both ends. We can start fucking collecting on the charity aspect as well. And that feels
no, I don't think, because nobody's collecting. There's like, I don't know, Islamic groups. I don't know, from what I've seen, a lot of the TikTok, you know, it's all, it's just kind of putting cash in people's pockets. Like, there's no like, it's not going to,
it's going to save the children. Like
it's obviously not mobile anti-aircraft systems, but it does help. Food is kind of there and it does cost money. I don't know, it's not good, but it's not good that they got to be, you know, get some people out of Gaza.
It feels like kind of a frenzy right now. And it, I mean, obviously there's the real need that's provoking, but it also feels like there is, people see the money now. They kind of say,
I like it. I like that you can be a grifter. I don't really care, you know, but it's cool that like you can be a grifter for Palestine. Normally that would, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that would resign you to a life of poverty. But now that you can make Palestine like a, you know, a brand, it's not good profit, but like, I think it does show that whether that matters, you know,
that's where I'm stuck. Like, I'm struggling to see how to like translate that into something substantial, something with substance, something effective on a political.
Yeah, that's the, you know, it's like the big question to be done. Or if there was like a party capturing various.
If there was a group of like well-motivated and ideologically, you know, good, capital G good, mid-ranking officers in certain NATO armies, that would be interesting. That'd be nice. Like, you know,
that might be
America's Nasser, if you will.
That might be my most strongly held
colonel
in somewhere out there. Office. I really believe in them. The hidden, you know, the occluded office is waiting to come out.
That's the thing. I don't think the problem is like NATO armies are so like depoliticized, like there's, because they get so much funding. As long as they get their money, everyone shut the fuck up. Like they need a proper like, you know, defeat to like radicalize mid-ranking officers. Like a journey, because like Afghanistan wasn't that. It was a defeat, but it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't Nasser trapped in the Fallujah pocket in 1948.
Yeah, they didn't lose. Like they didn't lose to Afghanistan.
Yeah, exactly. We need America needs to have like its back broken somewhere, like, you know, some fucking army. Like if Xi Jinping launches an invasion and takes over like the Western Seaboard, then we'll have some interesting officers, some interesting ideas.
To be honest, Palestine's basically on American territory. So it might have a similar impact, you know, if they get driven out of the
Actually,
office.
I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I heard or read somewhere that, like, the reason certain American nationalists love Israel so much is that it's kind of gauche to be an American nationalist. I mean, not anymore post-Trump, but, like, for a long time it was considered, like, a bit too gauche to be an American nationalist. But Israel is the ultimate American nationalist dream. So you could be a Zionist and through that express your American nationalism as support for Israel, which is like the platonic ideal of America.
Yeah, they're doing the stuff that it's still not okay to really say you want to do or do here, you know, killing all the Muslims, building a bunch of walls, torturing people for fun, legal murder.
Sex trafficking, pedophilia.
Yeah, and, you know, if it were legal here, then what would it, they're not going to, like, I guess that would just mean pedophiles can fly visa-free back and forth. I don't know, it's enough time there.
Yeah, well, I mean, the common refrain was what, that Israel is America's unsinkable aircraft carrier? Well, it's also like the unsinkable Jeffrey Epstein ranch.
Little Saint James. It's a friendly Little Saint James. It'll be an iron wall of Little Saint Jameses against the Oriental Horde.
It's very much like our, you know, our extended Wild West. Did either of you see this story?
I saw that. What's the deal there?
The cradle about the settlement in Galilee that has seceded from Israel. Has closed its closed its gates and said that no IDF soldiers are allowed in or no one is allowed in or out, like Jonestown, I guess. And they said we are severed entire all ties with. This is the same group that was saying they were going to. So it's interesting to see this. This is what is that? The Fredonia Republic? Are they familiar with this? The Fredonia, Texas.
Star Wars? No.
This was.
Is this the Waco thing?
No. That's not Waco. This is like Alamo era. This is like pre-Texas independence. This was kind of like the first shot at that. Was this group called the Fredonia?
Well, that's
Republic.
The first step to becoming a
and
U.S.
it
state.
Was just like this, what is now the Republic of the Galilee.
I say good. We should split Israel up to like every settlement should be its own country now. Like, it should all decide to like secede into like, it should be like the Holy Roman Empire, but like all settlements.
They should, well, that, you know, they're halfway there. You know, they're split up. They're allowed to fight each other and take each other's lands. But when it comes time to do a holy war,
yes,
you know,
I'm hoping for it.
Actually, on this topic of the occluded office, there was an occluded officer, Israeli militant, a Zionist occupation. Did you guys see this? Yair Netanyahu re-zabwabbed or whatever they got. Fuck, whatever their social. You know what I'm talking about? There's this guy. He's in Gaza. He's like, we will overthrow this fucking government. There are 100,000 reservists ready to pick up arms at any moment if you dare take one step back. I want to live here. Look at this fucked up house I'm in. I'm going to live here now. This is my home. We all died and shit for something, and it's to live here. Netanyahu, this is for you.
Yeah, he says something like, if you order us to retreat or if you refuse to invade Lebanon.
Is this like a dumb version of like the Stalin, like not one inch back thing, but like first it's tragedy, now it's worse?
It is way dumber. It is way dumber. If Stalin had a video camera back in the day, holy shit, though. That would be incredible. Mamma mia.
I'm thinking more like Japanese army with itself to commit greater and greater atrocities.
Actually, yeah, it would be like that. Yeah, it would be like the IGA and the IJN fucking competing over who can take Nanking first or whatever.
Okay, here, I've got the quote for you. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, this video is for you. So any listeners who are not Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, something else. We reservist soldiers do not intend to hand the keys over to any Palestinian authority. We do not intend to give the keys to Gaza to any entity, Hamas, Fatah, or any Arab entity. Reservist soldiers are behind you, and we want to win. Think really well who you leave the keys to after this. We want victory. Our brothers did not die for nothing. We weren't raped for nothing. We were not slaughtered in their... And we're not slaughtered in their beds for nothing. And he kind of just keeps going. He wants Gaza and to end the world. He wants a new front, at the very least, I think.
Well, I mean, there's still 80,000 settlers who haven't returned to like the northern, they're like the wherever they're from in the north because of Hezbollah. So like
it's like 200,000. Like, maybe that might be sorry. Good thing.
Yes, I don't know. I think I've read 80,000. However, a number like several tens of thousands at the very least, and they're like. At the end of the day, yeah, I mean, you still, if you're a country, if you're a serious country, you have to prove to your people that you can protect them. And if you have like hundreds of thousands of people who can't move back home, yeah, I mean, the only thing you have to do is open another front. But they can't do that because they know they're going to fucking lose. Except I don't even know if they know that. I feel like they're run, like it's completely run by stupid people now who actually think they're going to win.
Yeah, I think the biggest fear is probably like, if the liberals don't let us take the gloves off, Hezbollah is going to beat us. We got to make sure that the liberals are going to let us take our gloves off in Lebanon.
I wonder if Israel has like a Sylvester Stallone who could do like a Rambo 3 where he's like, are they going to let us win this time?
Oh my God. They don't make enough movies over there. They all suck. They don't have budgets. Like, what the fuck? What a shitty state. They should have 10,000 of these where there's a guy doing like Krav Maga Qatar. It's like 1,000 Hezbollah guys. Hezbollah Nick or whatever the fuck.
Have you guys watched that insufferable Israeli show where like basically they send spies to Tehran or something?
Homeland or Fauda?
Yeah, Fauda.
I've only watched the American version of every season.
Oh my god.
Yeah, the Israeli one is insane. Like, it's absolutely... First of all, it's shit. Like objectively, the production quality is shit. It looks awful. I don't know how a country that gets, like, $300 billion a year in U.S. aid can't make one good fucking movie.
It's shocking, right?
And, like, I'm sorry, but you're this fucking startup nation. Get a few fucking studios in there and fucking make something.
Their biggest movies are about crying for killing people, like Sabra and Shatila. Like, come on.
But even that's it's shit. Like, at least American Sniper. I mean, American Sniper was also shit, but like, at least the Americans have made enough movies about like, oh, we're sad for killing like 800 million Iraqis or Vietnamese or whatever. The Israeli ones, like, all the actors are like also shit. Like, they're not. Like Bradley Cooper, whatever else, at least he fucking, you know, did something all right with the American Sniper guy. Like, all the Israeli actors talk the same way. There's one aspect, there's no emotions. It's insane.
It's really fucked. Like, I guess everybody in the U.S.
Yeah, we also have the genre of, we're so badass and awesome. Look at how cool our guys that are. You would think Israel would come out a couple with those, right?
I've never seen one. There is a movie, I think it's called, like, Iron Rain or something. It came out in the mid-80s, or, like, 80, I think. It's an American movie, and they couldn't get the budget, or, like, the U.S. wouldn't let them film using American fighter jets because they, I think in the movie, like, Air Force One gets taken over or shot down or something. So they went to, like, an IDF Air Force, and they just shot using the planes that were on their way to bomb Lebanon and back. But yeah, I don't know why they can't make movies. Like I don't know. Did you guys see that new, like, animation thing, like, in English?
The gay, the guy who gets, like, thrown off a roof or whatever?
Yeah.
That was so bad.
It's basically just, like, donate money to Gaza on TikTok, also I'm gay. It's like, Hamas says I can come to Gaza to be a hostage and help people.
No, it's worse. It's first of all, the gay guy is portrayed as like grotesquely large and also like classic, like dyed hair, etc., all of that. And he's like, you know, he speaks in the most like your classic like gay guy tone, like tone of voice, hello, like that sort of thing. Like, we're going to go with Gaza.
I'm sorry.
I'm just trying. I'm pretending to be the fucking video, okay? I'm not doing my slur myself, okay? This is what the video was. And then, like, the video, by the way, the animation is so bad. The quality is, like, just unbelievably grim.
Like, premium.
And then he goes to Gaza, and, like, he gets captured and thrown off a roof.
Immediately.
Which, by the way, like, again, I'm not saying that, like...
By Sin War. Sin War's fucking, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's supposed to look like Sin War. It doesn't look like Sin War, but it's supposed to look like Sin War. But, like, again, not to, like, again, I'm sure Israelis aren't able to distinguish this, but... Keeping in mind that, you know, throwing gays off a roof was a specifically ISIS thing, and whatever else you think about Assam or Hamas or whatever, Assam were the ones who defeated ISIS in Gaza when ISIS tried to do an ISIS-like, you know, branch in Gaza. It was Assam who basically crushed them.
Immediately.
And which country has close ties to ISIS in Syria?
Which country had ISIS fire off the worst rocket ever to assassinate a leader of a different group every fucking 3 weeks before it was done? You know, like, goddamn.
Not to mention, like, you know, the collaboration between Israel and the Gulf states, and, like, specifically Gulf states using Israeli tech to, like, monitor and track LGBTQ people in the Gulf. And I know this
Pegasus?
Like, I've heard... Yeah, Pegasus, yeah. Using Pegasus to, like, track LGBTQ people I know in the Gulf.
That's a lot of investment.
They're trying to normalize relations.
No, yeah, we can't normalize... We can normalize with Israel. We cannot normalize with the gender. That is a step too far. The Zionist entity? Sure. Phil?
It's really cool that Israel's, like, culture war is, like, whether we can teach girls grade 5 math. Like whatever else you think of America, like, for the most part, the idea of, like, secondary education has been a settled issue in most of the rest of the world. But not Israel, because that's, like, political parties are assembled around whether, you know, an 11-year-old girl can be taught, like, math or algebra or whatever.
Yeah, fucking brawls on the floor of the Knesset over the exact age. you know, a girl has to stop reading. It's like abortion in like the like mid-90s. They're like arguing over weeks and shit.
It's just liberal democracies.
The marketplace of ideas.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought we had a... my basement flooded this weekend. It was awful. I was about to go to bed. I had just been looking up stuff to insulate my windows, keep my and I opened my door. You guys can see it right here. 2 hours to sop it up. You see, I've got dehumidifiers and shit running everywhere. That was hell. It was hell.
Do you know what caused it?
Yeah, just like an insane God-angering thunderstorm appeared and flooded my entire backyard, and then all the leaves that were just in the backyard, like pretty far away, kind of just flowed in. And about there was like a broom, like sweet. I'm like the guy from like that YouTube video where he unclogs the, that. There was like two trash bags where I had no idea. And so I freaked out. I dried it all, and then a friend of mine had an air move. Which you guys need an air move. Points air at the ground, flooding. I go there. I'm driving through Langley, Virginia, okay? And I'm on a one-lane road, 3 a.m. on a Saturday night. Motherfucker starts tailgating me in a souped-up Mazda. Just a shitty fucking car. He's got floodlights installed on the roof.
Floodlights on his Mazda.
He's right up on my ass. It's like a 5-mile-an-hour street. Insane. He's flashing his floodlights behind me. He's right on my ass. I'm like brake checking him. I could have shot the man. My God. It's a 25-mile-an-hour road. It's pouring rain. It's 3 a.m. There's 150-degree turns around, like, hills and shit. There's cliffs and ditches on either side. I don't know what's going on. I think he might have been drunk trying to fuck with me. He was trying to fuck with me, but I don't know what's going on. I managed to get away from him by fucking, like, breaking hard into a turn and then going the other way. It was, like, fucking insane. Yeah,
people have been driving insane.
I was so annoyed, too.
Since COVID. I've just been
cleaning up shit.
I mean, like, I don't know what's going on. And around here, another thing, too, is that they don't enforce the traffic laws anymore. So you can basically do whatever you worry about a ticket. The shoulder is now another lane.
I've seen some crazy shit. I think it's brain damage from COVID. And then also, specifically for this area, it's gotten a lot worse since the war started. I think people are like, you know that scene in Come and See where they're burning down the village? I think they're taking that and from, because they're doing that at their desk job, and they take it out on the road. You know, they've got that like fucking horny ass like murder rage going on.
Oh no, I believe it. I believe it. People are fucking hyped up.
It's gotten noticeably. I'm hyped up too. I'm a very chill. You guys know me. I'm not a very hot-headed guy. If anything, I'm too calm and humble. But yeah. And AP, you went to a goat. You won.
I did. I played at the Chicago Open. I played terribly. It was embarrassing. I won 2 out of my 6 games, and it was just depressing. I was studying so hard for it, and then I didn't sleep for probably 2 weeks beforehand.
Yeah, you mentioned that to me. That seems like not. That's what I would do. You know, I get probably should.
That's what I was saying. I was sitting there the first day. I was sitting around there with my girlfriends, and I'm telling them I'm so freaking nervous for this tournament. And they're like, maybe you should see a doctor about that. It doesn't seem healthy. Your heart pounding over a board game.
No, that's ridiculous.
And I told them, you know, I was messaging psychiatrists that morning, trying to get some. So don't you worry, I'm on there.
It's completely normal. Heart pounding. I do it every time. I always lose, which is unrelated, I think. No, board games.
I mean, my heart pounds over any competitive act. Like if I'm preparing for a competitive activity, I start getting nervous like hours before. I'm like, you know, pacing. Like when I played intramural football, like the day of a game, my heart rate's already up like the morning of a game that starts at night.
Yeah, especially, I know. Especially against the same community center.
No, it was just different colleges in the same university, but.
No, you know, the classic Disney Channel.
It's the plot of the plot of the American high school movie.
Oh, we gotta say
we have to defeat the rich high school in sports.
Oh, right. Yeah, the Coach Carter theme.
Yeah, to save a piece of infrastructure that should be public but isn't for some reason that a guy can just buy.
Actually, they lose in Coach Carter, which I think makes Coach Carter a great movie, is that they don't win. It's just it's about like learning how to lose, which is, you know, I suppose it came out to the tail end of the Iraq War. So fair
that's
enough.
Good. I was really into the Gridiron. You know why? We just
no, I don't know this one.
You guys know that one?
I'll be honest, I haven't watched a whole lot of sports movies. They look kind of boring. So I definitely need to check out this Coach Carter movie, because learning how to lose, that's where I need to learn. Oh my God, I was fucking tripping. I played this gentleman 3 times, casually. 1, 3 times. And we go and play our rated game in the tournament. And I fucking, it was terrible.
Got cocky.
It was so, oh yeah, right? That's what he was saying. He was too like, I'm going to pull out the secret Joe Psyche I haven't been showing you for the last 3 Back in the
that's another classic movie trope when like you're playing casually with someone and they miss all the darts or whatever. And then they're like, oh, guess what? Turns out I'm a right-handed, not left-handed. Got you. And then they just own you. It's like a classic movie trope.
That's what I've been doing. Anytime I've lost at anything, that's what I've been doing money on.
This is actually a Go tradition. Back in the medieval era of Japan, the games would last several days. And every night, they would go back to their castle full of Go players and study a bunch of secret joseki, come up with the secret shit that they hadn't shown us, whatever, last games, and pull it up on someone.
I think people are lying to you about the history of Go. I think it was invented in the... People are just making this shit up. You told me that's where they invented black belts. You can float if you think hard enough. You can eat the rocks good enough at the game.
Don't eat the rocks. The bulls were not finished with eating in mind. They're toxic.
Okay, that's the 2 minutes of Go. I put a hard limit, okay? If anybody wants to play Go with AP, we'll have a Patreon. Guys, let's get to a little thing I like to call World War I. I just finished a book called The Fall of the Ottomans by Eugene Rogan, my man. The guy from Dune. He's that guy from Shai Hulud.
Wait, what? The Kwisatz Haderach?
What's the guy? Who's the guy from Dune? The guy, yeah, the crazy Haderach. White boy? No, the crazy white boy guy.
That's like,
Arabic. Eugene Rogan's the Kwisatz Haderach. Very good. You know, something that I learned in that book that really surprised me was that Gaza was the most heavily bombed place in World War One, or heavily shelled place in World War One outside of the Western Front.
That is pretty insane.
I had no idea.
More than the entire Eastern Front
during the Second and Third Battle of Gaza. No, the single largest shell like location. There might have been more shells expended, but Gaza was the single most.
I think shells per kilometer squared or something.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It's like highest concentration.
The British had ships off the coast firing at it. A lot of other stuff.
Jesus Christ. And this was because the Ottomans supposedly.
Yeah, because the British were
desperate for
the Suez Canal. Mm-hmm.
They failed a bunch of times. They only got it through trickery.
Well, the Ottomans, like the British were always paranoid. The World War One is interesting because the British were actually genuinely paranoid that if the Ottoman Sultan Abdul Hamid, I believe it was, or Abdul Majid, I think Abdul Hamid abdicated just before, but whichever the Sultan was at that time, they were afraid that if he genuinely declared himself caliph, like Khalifa, and called for jihad, they were afraid that all the Muslims in their colonies, and especially the Muslims in India, would follow jihad, like they would do jihad against the British. Which
they were really afraid.
Yeah, they were paranoid about that, but never actually happened.
That's like, a lot of faith that the British had in the power of the caliph.
Yeah,
they really did.
Yeah, the British genuinely had more faith in like the Ummah as like some sort of like actual concrete Muslim identity, that like actually like mobilizable Muslim identity than anyone else. Like even the Germans were like encouraging it, but like I don't think the Germans really believed it would do anything. The British thought it would like end their fucking empire. And like it just went down like a lead balloon. It was just like everyone was like, all right, sure, pal, you're the caliph if you say so, man.
Yeah, after Kut al Amara, where the British like lost and they were capturing Iraq, they were like, we can never lose again. Or all the Muslims are going to go fucking like Power Rangers on us. They're going to like form up into a giant and they're going to destroy us. It's going to end everything. We cannot lose a single thing. Take, you know, do whatever you can. Your supply lines. If anything big happens, we're fucked. They're going to rise up. Which, you know, I guess in Cairo, they had not been treating people very nicely. Australian soldiers kept just burning down districts because they kept getting like chlamydia.
They were treating people in Cairo the way Australia today treats everyone in Bali.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
But also, like, the other big issue for the British was the Suez Canal. But, like, I don't think anyone really realized how badly the Ottomans, like, how unprepared they were and how completely, like, unmodernized their army was. It was completely fucked. Like, it was led by three useless fuck-ups in the Young Turks. But more than that, there was no cohesive Ottoman... You know, army beyond, like, okay, yes, Gallipoli was the only time, like, the Ottoman army actually was impressive, but everything in the Caucasus and the Eastern Front in Iraq was just a fucking
Iraq
shit show.
Iraq was, like, empty, more or less. Like, it didn't seem like they put any reason. I kind of thought Iraq was more important.
No, and they kept retreating up the rivers, just being chased down by the British.
Yeah, I do love some riverboat fighting, but, yeah, no, it, like, the amount of, like family politics involved, even in like small scale battles, like the amount of like finagling and like meeting a guy's cousin that was required to like organize a group of guys to go fight the British was shocking. And at the beginning of the book, I'm like, these fucking Bedouin are not helpful. They're not being helpful to anybody here. They are incredibly flaky. Flaky, I think, is a good word.
Well, Bedouin, the Bedouin mode of warfare has always been raiding. Like, they're not supposed to be an army. They're an army you use for, like, harassing columns and cutting off supply lines, but not, like, they're not there to face another army in the field. They've never been a reliable army.
And it fucked with them, too, because, like, they would take everything that wasn't nailed down when they won. Like, in Amman, I think, Jericho. I can't remember. One city in Jordan. The townsfolk joined up with the British and the Sharifian armies against the Ottomans because they're like, the Bedouin will steal our roof. They stole our roofs last time. Yes. This is fucked.
I think it was Aqaba, but yes.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but by the end of it, I'm like, you know what? I respect it. They really show no prejudice in who they backstab or ask for a higher price. My dad did always say,
if they're winning, they'll loot anything. But if they lose, as soon, yes, as a lot of people say, like there's an old hadith, and I don't know whether it's like the veracity of it is very questionable. I don't trust it, but there's a hadith that sometimes people say that's like Muhammad said, the Prophet Muhammad said, there's no man as untrustworthy as the Bedouin, which like is hysterical because after the Bedouin were pacified during the Islamic expansion, they became like the platonic ideal of what Arabs are supposed to be. Like, you know, the idea of like the romantic sort of the guy with his horse in the desert and his clan and that's it. And there's no, they're like the classic example of a hardy peoples that is Muslims who are like, you know, dandy fops in the court of the Abbasids or the Umayyads who are like drinking wine all day and writing poetry or imagining themselves.
Yeah, they, you know, they're like me. They've got a lot of potential, but you know, if you could just focus a little bit more, you guys would be incredible. You'd be the Oppenheimer. Anytime you guys get your shit together, the world ends. The cycle of civilizations over there. Whenever you guys figured it out, you'd stay focused. Your assignments in on time.
So what you're saying is we need some Adderall.
Yes, absolutely. Maybe not. Well, yeah. What? How much worse could give it the Bedouin? Probably no.
There's not enough of them anymore. That's the problem. They're much like the Scottish Highlanders. They're a dying breed.
Another warrior people, the Scottish
Highlanders. They're the Bedouin. They're Bedouin. Well, they're all Turk. The Highlanders are all Turk.
Yeah, except instead of like horses, they got their skirt or whatever.
They don't ride that. No, I'm pretty sure they also like fly on their kilt.
They run around with their big, they have the big swords. That's what they're about.
They're much more of an infantry formation, but yeah.
Also dispossessed by the
Yeah, I think the Scottish Highlands and the Islands are not that great for horses, for cavalry. It's kind of difficult terrain for fielding large or becoming an effective rider.
Look, I'm not going to learn about Scotland. yeah. Guys, my Canadian geography really need. I can't overstate how bad my is. I've learned about the various provinces. I mostly know where Quebec is. Listeners might be shocked to learn that there is an English-speaking province to the right of Quebec called Newfoundland.
Well, calling what they speak English is a bit generous, but sure.
You have, like, my prejudice against Canadians, you know, it's shallow but wide, and yours is very deep and specific. Like,
well,
like bi-cult.
It's similar to how Europeans would, like, be okay with someone 2,000 miles away but hate someone from the next village over. We Canadians have that, especially because, like, you know, I'm from Toronto. And the classic sort of stereotype is that people from Toronto think they're the center of the world, which is true. We are the center of the world.
Yeah, you're in the same time zone.
The rest of Canada is...
I had no idea.
Well, and also we're as a cultured city with, you know, arts, music, etc.
Yeah,
whereas the rest of Canada is, like, a collection of villages and hovels. Not fit to be a country, but you know.
Aren't those that's the city where they where Scott Pilgrim, so it's kind of like a large, extremely large yes. suburb.
I don't mean to disappoint you, but Scott Pilgrim is fictional. I hope you know.
I thought he was your prime minister.
Actually, I'm happy that you said Scott Pilgrim and not Drake. Because like Drake is our eternal shame.
You mean Drizzy?
He's embarrassing. It's so fucking embarrassing, man.
He is kind of what I think of Canada. When I think of a Canadian city, I think of Drake. I imagine you walking down the street with your matchlock pistol in your back pocket, the police capturing you with like claymores, and maybe like a large cannon.
Speaking of Drake, I saw an amazing take on his beef with with Kendrick. Listen to this. Lamar's most recent Drake diss is called, quote, "Not Like Us," and reached number one on Billboard Hot 100. It goes after Drake's cultural affiliation south. Lamar, quote, "No, you're not a colleague, you're a fucking colonizer." It's hard to hear that and not remember that Drake's mother is Jewish, and that this is the same invective used to undermine Jewish sense of belonging in Israel. Such racist habits of thought have become potent rhetorical weapons in the progressive.
I'm so excited. I love that. I saw that. You know, I might have been a little down in the dumps or whatever. I don't remember anything before that moment. Once I read that, I was up, dude. It's like a shot of adrenaline. I love this. That's new. That's new, beautiful Zionist technology. That we don't get that very often. It's always empty land, whatever. You know, you kill the gays, but they're just bad, whatever. You know, it's lazy most of the time. But that's brand new. That's really like them.
I mean, calling a black Jewish man a colonizer, progressive, yeah, more like progressive left. Regressive. Am I right?
Colonizer, but you have to put all the, like, it's just C and then asterisk, 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 because it's a slur. Yeah.
Sure. Anti-Semitic.
And like, why would you do that? Like, he's mostly in the news right now for being pedophilia, from what I understand.
Yes.
No reason you had to do that. There was no reason they had to do that. Why would you do that? Great article, though. I'm glad they wrote.
We need to associate him with it, is what we need to do. when I see someone accused of pedophilia, my first thought should be, how does this relate to Israel?
Yeah. And no, you cannot extradite them.
That's what I would think if I was a part of somewhere they cannot propagandist is.
I wonder if he'll get Alan Dershowitz to defend him.
Dershowitz on the track. Yeah.
Dershowitz in Jersey. Oh,
right. That's there. Right. I just remember the Norman Finkelstein rap. You guys ever seen that? It's from like 2006. It's low-key. And he's like freestyling on the radio. And he has Norman there. And he's like, come on, Norm, you got this. Let's go, Norm. And Norm just goes, Norman Finkelstein.
Exclusive, no king back-to-back. Yeah. My name Norman, and I've been fellas. I went in a plane and a truck, not to the people of Gaza, don't let them. They felt the, from Philly to the, I'm live on the, in the, Norman, you know I've got a flow, my flow is rapid, here with my low key and,
there's more, keep it up, keep it up.
My lyrics are weapons of smashing, I don't like, or,
Arabic.
You know that person that made us do this? Yes, Arabic. You know, like her. Because this time they went too far. It's Norman Finkelstein repping.
Yeah!
Yeah! Norman Finkelstein!
I have not
seen it. I have to check this out.
You can only find like a 120 of it somewhere. It might have got taken off of the Palestine purge, but all right, guys. All right, your sails are blowing. You're in the Gulf of Aden. You're ready. You've got all this spice. Your captain's taking the spice to get you across the narrow straits, the gates of despair, etc. I've brought an article from Phenomenal World, a magazine talking about underdevelopment, war, product, global technology, that everything that can somehow mention nothing about any. It's really incredible. This is like college. It's by Andrew Yamakawa Elrod, Gregory Brew, and Caleb Demaru on oil in the Red Sea. Gregory Brew and Caleb are high-ranking. Gregory is a Yale University graduate who now teaches. Sorry if I get Gregory. Yeah, Joe. This is called Positioning Aden. Prior to October 2023, about a seventh of global maritime trade passed through the Gulf of Aden and the Red Sea to and from the. As a result of attacks by Houthi fighters on commercial ocean freight. Traveling through that area, that volume has fallen by more than half. Longer shipping routes around the Cape of Good Hope have increased freighting rates dramatically. The average price to ship a 40-foot container almost tripled from $1,400 to $4,000 between December and January. Today, that cost remains around $3,100. Longer freight routes have also increased world demand for oil, both to power container ships and stocks and delays. As 2024 progressed, however, declining European purchases have offset this. As of May, Brent crude prices remain an annual average for 23 of $82 per barrel. Oil demand this year will increase by 1.2 million to 1.3 million barrels of oil per day. While OPEC is forecasting an increase of 2.2 to 100 out of 1%. That sounds pretty. Throughout this conversation, we're going to hear from two guys. We're experts on the answering questions from a very dumb guy. How many times do you guys think this piece mentions Palestine?
Zero times.
Three.
Why would Palestine matter? That's, first of all, not a country. So international trade.
Control F Palestine.
Can't affect it whatsoever.
Israel is in Gaza.
How about Control F Gaza?
Oh, one of three. Okay, we're in. Okay. a conversation with Caleb Demaru and Jeffrey Beru. Let's begin at the regional level. What were the geopolitical tensions surrounding the Red Sea shipping routes prior to the Israeli assault on Gaza, and how has the Houthi response altered these dynamics? Caleb says, the region has seen rising instability for decades. Competition between Ethiopia and Egypt, as well as between Iran and Saudi Arabia, has transformed the African coast into a strategic battleground. Turkey's military base in Somalia, the Gulf States installations in Eritrea, along with a new $35 billion development in Egypt, and Ethiopia's planned naval base in Somaliland, that the traditional geopolitical divide between the Horn of Africa and the Middle East is eroded. That's the first part, I think. Two very far-flung regions. I like that. The war in Gaza is intensifying. The Houthi attacks ought to be understood within this wider geopolitical context beyond the immediate war. The Houthis are advancing Iranian interests against those of the Egyptians and Saudis, who are direct stakeholders. This is really about power projection, showing the extent to which Iran can arm proxies with sophisticated and highly impressive sea drones and undermine Saudi and, by extension, American influence.
This is something that bothers me a lot, is how much these people emphasize that the Houthis are armed by Iran. First of all, like, the Houthis, Ansarullah, I mean, you know, the official name is Ansarullah. I'm going to say Ansarullah for all intents. Yeah, well, that's literally what I was trying to say, is like, they're the Yemeni government now. I'm sorry, but they won. They control Sana'a. They control all the stuff that the Yemeni army used to have. Whatever, like, and like the Southern Transitional Council is a separate thing altogether, and like Aden and all of that. But like, for all intents and purposes, Ansarullah are the government of Yemen. They are the country of Yemen. They have all the resources of Yemen, including arms manufacturing and including the stuff that was in the stockpile of the Yemeni army. So like, this idea that like these guys are still
two armies, two countries. We've got two countries' armies worth of shipping.
Yeah. So I mean, this idea that they're like ragtag, like still sandal wearing, butt chewing guys who like carry Kalashnikovs. Like, I'm sorry, but they're an army now. They have all that stuff. They don't need like whatever Iran provides them with is like not exactly necessary to their survival. They already have everything they need. I'm not saying they don't get anything from Iran, but like, this shit is so annoying. Everyone says it. The FT says it. The New York Times say it. They all are like, the Iran-backed Houthi rebels or whatever. They're not rebels anymore. They fucking won. The rebellion is over.
They're still often referred to as militia.
Which is insane, because what kind, like, at what point, like, would you say a militia has won? Like, well, they control the capital. They control almost all the populated areas. They have all the fucking, you know, currency and everything.
They fought a battle in space.
Yeah.
Space.
They can project, you know, power onto
Well, you can't have it both ways. Either they project power across the fucking straits, which means they're like, you know, they've won the civil war. They're no longer just a militia. Or they can't project power, which means they're like, you know, why should we care if they're a threat or not?
Talk about them like Al-Qaeda or something. Like that they could just spring up anywhere. It's just like a bunch of guys with machetes. Like, it's really crazy. Yemen is like, I don't even know if Palestine got the Yemen treatment of just ignoring it so fully. Like, the...
Well, it's just like, it's frozen in time. Like, they just haven't, like, they still treat it like it was, like, I don't know, 8-9 years ago.
So in recent years, the U.S. has had a limited role in Yemen. Much of the U.S. intelligence and logistical support to the Saudis and to the UAE happened prior to 2018. In 2021, the Houthis were targeting oil tankers and other strategic locations in both Saudi Arabia and the UAE with aerial drones. It was the Saudis bearing the brunt of these attacks. Even between Saudi Arabia and the UAE, there is no consensus on the future of Yemen. Even if North and South Yemen remain permanently separated, it would leave the Houthis with a continued presence on the Red Sea. For this reason, they do not really need to consolidate any more than they already have. The Saudis are already adjusting to this new reality, while the UAE is likely hoping to shift the balance a bit more. Meanwhile, the US is increasingly sidelined. In short, the status quo has already changed. Ultimately, the US may have to adjust to a reality that includes a sovereign state governed by a proxy of Iran, despite potential hesitations formally recognized. KD, one of the assholes, says, what do we make of these of increasing international disorder on the one hand, and the relative stability in energy markets on the other? The fact that the global energy market has absorbed the Red Sea disruption may be linked to deteriorating regional stability. It's why China has not gotten more involved, even though their trade is being affected. Ultimately, China is less threatened by a disruption in the Red Sea than say, in the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, no, because China, like Yemen has been specific in not targeting China doesn't get targeted, Russia doesn't get targeted, India doesn't get... Yemen has been very specific on its criteria for what ships get targeted. Yeah. Like, this is bullshit. This is so stupid. Yemen has been very explicit that it's targeting ships that help Israel or dock in Israeli ports or supply Israel. It's that fucking simple.
Yeah, Israelis don't own a shipping company. You know?
In Beijing, yeah.
They've been very obvious. They put PowerPoints out about this every single week. Every ship they hit, they like write a little, you know, essay about it.
They point out the reasons for targeting those particular ships. And also, I'm sorry, but if I was a pilot on one of those shitty ships, I would love to hang out with a bunch of Yemenis and play cards and chew pot. That would look a good time.
That's all I want. I want some cod.
Dude, did you see the Yemen published also that any student in America that gets like expelled or whatever can get a free ride scholarship to like Sarawak? Which, like, honestly, I would take it. Fuck it. I would hang out with my profs, chew some pot, you know, hang out, shoot the shit. That was awesome.
Yeah. I feel like you could easily swing that into, even if you were some evil fuck, you could easily swing that into a good career. Like going forward.
Like try.
You show up at the think tank.
Like, no, you should go there with your business degree and teach them about derivatives. Teach them about, you know, subprime mortgages.
Options trading.
Yeah.
Weekly options trading and sports gambling. Oh my God. God, we could really destroy Yemen.
Honestly, instead, how much money did America spend trying to destroy Yemen and defeat Ansarullah? All they could have done was sent one JP Morgan exec to like explain to them like subprime mortgages and like fucking derivatives, and like the Yemen would have tanked immediately. Like they would have been fucking
called a famine. They wouldn't even need to blockade anything. They just sent Pete, you know.
Get a micro loan.
Yes,
they pulled that on India and absolutely destroyed. Like the lower half of the economy.
You know what? I think we'd all like to see a resolution. So does the U.S. The U.S. like to see a resolution to the problem, but lacks the will to get involved. As the Red Sea isn't a theater of national security, isn't a theater of national security priority for the U.S. So because buy-in is low, the capacity of local actors like the Houthis to produce instability is arguably higher, no one wants to take full responsibility for addressing the problem. Katie says, energy is one of several commercial goods that travel across the Red Sea. The total worth is one. But to call it the energy purchase is one thing, but to call it a crisis that wasn't probably misses the mark. The Egypt, whose $8 billion bailout from the IMF did not even account for losing half of the source of its Suez revenue, is certainly a crisis. To the extent that several Horn of Africa nations rely on wheat from Ukraine and Russia, interruptions in that supply certainly constitute a crisis. These economic crises in Northeast Africa are of great concern to the United States and its allies, given the concerns over terrorism and immigration. And this is all to say nothing of the inflationary effects of rising cost of container goods shipments. Certainly consumers in the West having to pay a little bit more for manufactured goods does not constitute a crisis per se, but the inflationary effects will still be felt in the long run. I like that he threw immigration in there.
God forbid people get their Amazon delivery a couple of days.
Immigration. It's like, for the U.S.? There's not that many, like, I've been noticing a lot more people walking around or anything. I know a couple, but, like they haven't been showing up with their cousin, 35 of their cousins.
I used to know Miss South Sudan. I was part of this community outreach group when I was a teenager. And anyways, one of the chicks there was Miss South Sudan.
You gotta be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm listening. Yeah. Hello. Keep going.
Tall too. Oh my God. Probably like 6'3" or something. It's statuesque. Absolutely statuesque. Also very nice, right? Yeah. That's my only connection to Sudan.
That is also my only. Also know where it is, unlike Quebec.
Do you think the average American knows where Sudan is?
No.
Like if I pick a random yank off the street, no.
Are you serious?
I don't know.
If you gave them a multiple choice question, is Sudan, what continent is Sudan on?
It's in Arabia.
I doubt you would probably get maybe one quarter of people getting it right.
Jesus, so basically just random. You gave them multiple choice. 25% as if you would if you randomly picked.
It's on a rocket. Yeah, random.
Yes.
They know where America is. Chance. They get a bit of that. They don't pick parts of America.
America fascinates me. It terrifies me. Like the American public, I could do a PhD thesis on like, and it's not a moral judgment. It's not like I don't think. Like everyone else is better than American because American. Like, there's part of it is deliberate, of course, like, you know, obfuscation and like deluge of information to like, you know, make sure no one really knows what's going on when it comes to like all the fucking special ops and CENTCOM and all of that. But it still amazes me how much money goes into like the American empire in contrast to how much the average American knows about the world.
Like, I feel like
where all the fucking stations
I have
are.
Like a mental, like, my geography's bad. Probably got some of the best geography in America. And I went to a pretty good school. But it's bad. A European peasant knows where shit is more than I do.
You should have done like me and retrained your brain on a paradox strategy game until you knew the location and also every country in
I'm such a hipster freak. I'm always playing Islands or like Mexico or whatever. Something. I never play anything big. I'm never playing the HRE or the Ottoman. It's too much shit. I don't know.
You didn't play the United States
Peru
or Central America?
Chile. That's always a hotspot for me in those map games, but it's my fault. It's my fault. I did win the first round of the geography. Nigeria. I had like a Rain Man. Closed my eyes, put my fingers to my temple. And then I was immediately eliminated in the first round of the. But that was a pretty big moment. I could feel my friends rushing into my body just thinking about it.
I think it's crazy just how much like goes in and out of the absolutely how much money is flowing in and out, and how you know when you live here, you just I mean everything costs so much fucking money, but you're making so much money too. It's just it's insane. The flow is it feels very much like being a cog in this.
I like it. I like the money. That's good, you know? I'd like more of it. Anything.
Yeah, well, I like the how much money I bring in.
I don't.
It's the how much money I have to spend.
I don't like that either.
That's the
like
issue.
Any part of I wish I had just land that generated value. I wish I had peasant or something. Yeah, I'll protect them. I don't mind fighting a guy with my bros.
You could be like Lenin, and you could manage the peasants for your ailing mother in her old age.
Are you talking shit about Lenin?
No, he's my boy.
Let's move on. I'm upset now. So this is it just gets pretty good. This is when we start getting into talking around anything at all. So while the United States has successfully de-risked its energy supply, de-risking itself is not risk-free. In 2015, China invested around $250 million in a port in Pakistan called Gwadar.
I'm sorry, first of all, that's Gwadar. Such poor sentence construction. You've used risk to
de-risking yourself is not risk-free.
These freaks don't have a fucking editor. Get an editor in there. Jesus Christ.
That's good. That's a sound blur. Just say that on the news for 5 seconds. That's pretty good. Look at that guy. They got a smart guy. He's got glasses to Yale.
Think of how proud that guy was when he wrote that said, de-risking yourself is not risk-free.
I do believe this is a heavily edited audio or like a roundtable discussion perhaps, but it's published to a blog. This is good. This is the part where they just threaten people, which is weird. They're not CIA agents. They don't have power. They're think tank guys, but they threaten China with terrorism. China invested about $250 million in a port in Pakistan called Gwadar, with up to $1 billion planned in ancillary investments in infrastructure such as airports and desalination plants. The idea was that this port would provide a land bridge for the construction of an oil pipeline from China's Middle East export partners that would bypass the Strait of Malacca, a small strip of ocean cutting across the Indonesian archipelago. China was always fearful that the strait could be easily blockaded by rivals like India or the United States in the event of a military confrontation, leaving it effectively cut off from its energy supply. So Gwadar represented the most important strategic tool for de-risking it. However, just last month, separatist rebels launched a coordinated attack on Gwadar port, leaving some analysts wondering whether China's presence in Pakistan could be sustained. Without Gwadar, China may become vulnerable again to the blockade. Oh, God. That guy's erection just poked me. I felt it all the way over here. That was crazy. So again, de-risking is not risk-free. You guys were right. He's extremely fucking proud of this. He like totally is threatening China. Who are these analysts? Are they Chinese? Or is it another guy they know? Okay. Here, to what extent are the rivalries in the Red Sea by the larger economic and military ties with China, Europe, and the United States? Great question. The answer is no. Here's a counterfactual exercise that is of interest. Let's imagine the United States did not care about the Red Sea. Rather than attempt to flex its naval power in the region, it would look to revitalize its many bases in the Gulf and continue to outsource Red Sea security to the Saudis. Clearly, this is not the case. Just as the Houthis used the war in Gaza as a springboard to justify a campaign with broader aims, the United States very early on has used Red Sea stability to assert itself in the region in a new way. Of course, it is doing so now through a multilateral coalition compared to the unilateral campaigns of the early 2000s when the U.S. launched its first military base in the Horn of Africa. This all means that policymakers in the United States clearly see some bigger issues at play behind the Houthis' unprecedented show of force, and the U.S. is not content to repeat the mistakes of the pre-9/11 era and leave the Red Sea to the Saudis and Egyptians. The same can be said for China, which now has a base in the Horn of Africa. China and Russia recently signed a deal with the Houthis for safe passage of their ship. I like that a lot.
It wasn't a signed deal. The Yemen just said, we're not going to fucking target you. Like, what are they talking about?
I think Yemen was very clear about who and why they were targeting. We have very specific targets and for a very specific... and all you have to do is stop killing and retreat, and you will stop losing ships that are docking at your ports.
Not even permanently. You just have to take a break. You just got to stop for a
minute. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
There's not that much more here. It's mostly just like not mentioning Palestine in like seemingly roundabout ways. But I just wanted to hit you guys with some pretty good quotes. Oh, wait. We've got a good one. It's about the Ottoman. The Red Sea remains the most important naval route connecting Europe and Asia. This makes it vital for naval mobility and logistics, especially since all the major powers now operate military bases in the region, which I think is everybody is just in Djibouti. There's just, it's just like a square kilometer with like a skyscraper that goes up into the sky and everybody gets like alternating floors.
Kind of like Delaware, but for militaries instead of corporations.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Everybody's just got a registered base there. It's all just like a PO box. In a conflict scenario, controlling or denying access to these waterways would entail a strategic objective to influence enemy military capabilities of adversaries and restrict the movement of naval forces. This is what helped the Ottomans stake out their own sphere of influence, despite the ostensible naval superiority of the Portuguese. So given these strategic interests represented in this waterway, great power rivalries play a very significant role on both sides of the...
Man, can you... Like, this is awesome. Like, I wish I was one of those people that gets interviewed and gets paid, like, $300,000 a year to just say the dumbest, most inane things imaginable and, like, be treated like I'm some kind of god genius for saying things like, it's actually very risky to de-risk yourself from certain risk factors, you see.
You know, the Ottomans maintained control despite there being four Portuguese boats there with cannons that were better. Isn't that crazy?
Also, the Ottomans didn't really control Yemen. Like, Yemen was famously resistant to Ottoman incursion. Like, it was only controlled in the same way that you can control, like it was controlled the same way a paradox grand strategy player would control, like a color of land with your particular, like, you know, color. But it wasn't controlled, like, on the ground. Like, they didn't really have any power projection into the mountains of Yemen.
No, how could you? Really hot. You're on the other side of them.
They're really high, and the Yemeni people were very good at, like, guerrilla war and cutting off Ottoman supply lines.
Oh, they should have done that. They could do that now. Saudi's out of there.
You're like the main character in Office Space, when you walk into the meeting with the Bobs, the consultants that are trying to fire everyone, and you just say, you know, it's a really risky endeavor to try to de-risk this enterprise, and they just hire you on the spot.
God, can you imagine, like... Any of us, we walk into a fucking think tank, we got the right pedigrees or whatever. We all of us know enough random trivia, you know, to make ourselves look like fucking geniuses in a crowd of these. Like, oh, do you know about Abdul? He was in charge of the Ottoman Empire. He did something very similar to this Chase Bank merger that, you know, or like, you know, Ottoman cannons, they were bigger, but the Europeans figured out how to make their cannons.
Yeah, it's fucking insane.
And then the article ends. They also go on about the Abraham Accords and stuff. The future of the world order has an immediate political salience this year with the U.S. election and the division within Congress over supplemental military spending for Ukraine and Israel. Not true. Only for Ukraine. Do you see U.S. domestic politics as a variable in the regional situation in the Red Sea? To a certain extent, yes. As we've seen with the procession of the Abraham Accords, there is a manner in which a Trump presidency would reshape the scope and manner of U.S. engagement in the Red Sea. However, just like it would have been hard to predict the Abraham Accords or Hamas's attacks on Israel, it would be impossible to predict precisely what these changes would look like, or even whether this will make the region more or less stable. It's pretty good.
We can't predict anything. Congratulations. Thank you, genius. Wonderful. Great analysis.
They're describing the Abraham Accords like it was like a... Like, surprise attack. You know, like Trump was, like, getting ready. They trained for 2 years. Trump's on a fucking paraglider. Like, taking a fucking Valentine from Saudi or whatever. Like, I think both a Trump and Biden administration would face a very difficult road ahead with regard to Yemen. Military strength cannot accomplish the U.S. goals against the Houthis, but a Trump administration would likely favor increased use of military force, potentially spreading the fight to include Iranian targets, as there is a broad support for the idea that pressure on Iran will rein in the Houthis. So there's a risk of the conflict growing under a Trump president, but the outlook for Biden isn't much better. The U.S. doesn't have effective means of leverage to compel the Houthis to change their actions.
Well, that's so funny because that end right there, that's what the entire article should have been. The U.S. doesn't have any way to compel the Houthis to direct their behavior. Except actually just like listening to them and being like, okay, this is what you want. Okay, we'll stop sending fucking arms to Israel.
It's crazy. They can't even mention the thing that they have the power for. It's like insane. That's also the only definite statement. I like went through it. There is no definite statements. It's, here's a counterfactual that might suck your dick. Or, you know, maybe perhaps this could influence events. And, you know, de-risking is not risk-free, maybe, sometimes. It just ends with, but America is powerless.
Okay, yeah, there's this weird trick to solve all your international shipping issues. And Biden just doesn't want you to know what it is.
Biden declares war on Israel. I will.
Yeah, presidents hate this one weird trick.
I'm pretty talkative. Voters like me. I'm plucky.
I enlist. I fucking drive down south and enlist.
Oh my Marines. God!
Like I want to be on boots on the ground in Tel Aviv. Absolutely. Like fucking put God me in
damn.
There.
I never even considered that. They'd have me in an instant. I will go D-Day on that shit. I will be the first one in the boat. I don't mind getting missed. I don't even want to be in a jet. I want to be up in there. You know, I want to see that shit. Oh,
parachute me into Tel Aviv.
Fire
honestly.
Me into Tel Aviv.
It would be so sick.
Fire me in there. I'll land. I'll figure it out. I don't need a parachute in there, Biden. Just let me come back home and get tax-free income for like the 3 months. I don't even need that, but like that would be. Assume that's part of it. Yeah, I don't know. That article is pretty crazy. I've been thinking about it all.
So stupid. These people are so stupid.
I'm gonna keep de-risking.
Fuck.
De-risking is a risky.
Does anybody ever re-risk? Does anybody ever re-risk their energy supply? Has anybody ever done that? We're going to build a really shitty bridge, so we got to go over. We're going to make our guys do jumps.
Re-risking is a risky. Is a de-risking.
Also, I like how this entire article talks about energy supply and doesn't once mention how much Saudi has America by the balls when it comes to like OPEC driving up oil prices. Like, Biden went to Riyadh to, like, grovel at the feet of Bin Salman. And Bin Salman was like, yeah, no, fuck off. We're going to keep oil prices high. I don't care much. Fuck you. Go fuck
See, that's
yourself.
What I like about the Bedouin. Completely no loyalty. I really appreciate it. I like that. I really like that. That's what I like. Like, Jordan, none of that. There's none of that energy amongst the Hashemite dogs, you know? Like, they'll do whatever. But the Saudis.
They like their money. They like. They want OPEC money. Why, like, why the fuck? Should they help Biden with, like, lower gas prices? Fuck you. No, we want OPEC.
Yeah, but they won't even take, like, a 2% haircut. You know, Jordan will just do whatever. The Saudis are like, no, what do you mean? Are you going to pay me back?
A 2% haircut for your average Saudi prince means, like, 1 week less of Baccarat at Monaco. Which, like, you know, parts out to, like, you know, the all...
Do you know how to play Baccarat?
I don't know. I've seen it being played. I'm still not quite sure how to play it. But it's a big
thing. Is learning it.
The Saudi princes love to play it, like especially the older ones. They love Monaco and play Baccarat Monaco.
And I don't know any good Saudi princes. All the Saudi princes, just like two, but that's more than you would think, right? We didn't really hang out. We should have hung out more in high school. Why didn't my parents' anti-Saudi bias that kept me away from hanging out with Saudi? I would have got some good startup capital. Maybe I'll hit them up.
Yes. Hey, you remember me? I was the guy that called you a pig back in high school. Smoke me out?
Yeah, I repeated the fact that you got cocaine diplomatic immunity, which is probably not true, then I don't really think about it, but somebody told me that. And he's like, oh yeah, they just get cocaine mailed to their house. They have diplomatic immunity. I don't know if that's true.
I mean, it's not diplomatic immunity, it's just they're rich enough to get it. Like, I don't think it has anything to do with diplomatic immunity, it's just they're all that like class of like diplomatic elites get it just because they're rich. They have the connections.
Yeah. It's also right next to Langley, so they probably just drove by and popped it in the mailbox.
Yeah, also Coke is a good one to get mailed to you because there's no it's hard to detect by smell or whatever. You know, so
I bet CIA cocaine is like the best. Like I bet like if your buddies at Langley are getting it to you straight from like a cartel, straight from Bogota, like
yeah, that's where they cut
you're
it.
You're not fucking around.
Yeah.
You're getting pure
where they
stuff.
Cut it, you know? That's where it starts. They gotta ship it from Langley all the way back to Miami. They wanna keep their eyes on the product.
How terrible would it be though, when you OD on the CIA because they cut it with fentanyl? Yes, every one of America's institutions is hollowed out now. They can't even keep the CIA cocaine clean.
I guess I'm assuming that like the CIA would be nice enough to give you the coke before it's cut if you're like a Saudi. Like it's like we gotta grease
Have
the
any Saudi princes
in their Gulf pals.
Anyone that's learning Russian?
Not that
I'm Saudi prince knows Russian.
I know I'm there have been like rumors of how some of them are like druggies.
How
could
they be?
True freaks, but no. I mean, I'm sure some of them have OD'd, but they probably buried that. They're like, oh no, it's just a heart attack.
Yeah, no, I just assumed they were old. Fucking, it never occurred. I'm kind of orientalist towards the Saudis, to be quite honest. I'm like an Orient, like Palestinians, like Syrians, Lebanese, normal guys. They're just like me and you, you know, regular guys. But the Saudis, I'm like a 1920s like asylum. I don't know if I'm wrong.
I have strong feelings about this, but that's for another pod.
Yeah, guys, I think that was a good episode of West Bank Robbery. Guys, enjoy that.
Yeah, it was great.
I hope you listener enjoyed that.
I enjoyed myself.
AP, armor-piercing wine.
I polished off an entire bottle of wine with me.
Anyo, Paulus, whatever. Okay. Always right. Pissing. You haven't pissed once unless you've ran away very silently.
Always pissing. Always pissing.
Also, dear listeners, we are at episode 28. This will be our 28th episode. In a long, long, long time ago, we agreed that episode 30, when we launched a Patreon. Keep on the lookout for that. But it's important that in this period of gearing up for the war of the wallets, that you tell your friends. So go tell a friend with your real human mouth. Or like 15, let's go with 5 people on the internet. 5 people on the internet, or you tell somebody with your real human mouth. Because that's the only way podcasts spread. Advertising doesn't work. Nobody trusts that shit. I know I don't click on random podcasts. It's like a fucking spam link.
Yes, if you see a link to West Bank Robbery.
Yeah, right.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Everybody go check out Amr on his various Radio War Nerd appearances. Also, Das Kriminal, fantastic podcast. AP, say goodbye.
Goodbye. Free Palestine. Goodbye.
All right. Free Palestine. Fuck the police. That's a wrap.